Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 plus up to $425 in weekly bonuses depending on shift. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
CarMax is hiring experienced auto technicians for many of its 200-plus stores nationwide. If you're looking for a job where you can make a great living while working on the cars that you love, then CarMax is the place for you. Join CarMax to grow your technical expertise and work with state-of-the-art tools and technology. Work with the cars you love. Join CarMax. Apply today at CarMaxAutoTech.com.
Time now for Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome in. We have Dan Issel in studio now for a couple of days, and he got through the Dallas airport, and he's still telling stories. which are good, because this is one ugly day, isn't it? And,
is it ever? And I think it's supposed to be that way for the next couple of days. Is it ever going to stop? But you remember, was it last spring? Last spring, it rained every day for about a month and a half.
It seemed like it, right?
Yeah. So, a gray, ugly day, and hopefully by the weekend this will all be cleared out of here.
We're going to talk some basketball. We're going to talk some horse racing. And first out of the chute in a few minutes, we're going to have Tim Thompson, the analyst for Vanderbilt basketball. And as you know, we're trying to go around the league and maybe even get into the ACC and talk about the teams and how this transfer scenario called the portal has affected everybody.
Have you given up your title? You're still czar of the transfer portal, aren't you?
I am, but the way I look at it now, there's not a whole lot of talent left in there, so I can't waste a lot of time.
There's not a lot of quality, but there's a lot of quantity.
Speaking of Mr. Grossman, have you noticed how good Jack looks today? This is the first time. How long we've been on the air?
About two months. I think the first three weeks I would wear shirts like this.
No.
Yes.
This is the first time I've ever seen you with a collared shirt on. You usually have a t-shirt with some sports logo on it that somebody gave you, and you know why Grossman is dressed like this today, Mike.
Oh, let me take a guess. Somebody from Kansas City.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Bingo. We've got a big wig from the home office in Kansas City in the studio this morning, and Grossman looks like $1 million. Whatever happened.
Should I do this more often, Dan?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Whatever happened, we were going to get Jack a date, and Kevin at Village Anchor gave us a $100 gift certificate, and that kind of fell through the cracks. You dress like that, we can find you a date.
Sounds good.
We need to get that revitalized. Kevin Granger was nice enough to give us a $100 gift certificate. We got to get that back on track.
Well, I agree. And remember yesterday I talked about the kid from Georgia Tech, from New York, Stephon Marbury, coaching in China.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I said he was coaching the Wuhan Bats.
Yeah, and had a bad joke about that.
Look at this, Dan Issel.
Somebody sent you a hat?
Yeah.
A picture of a hat.
A texter.
A picture of...
Oh, how about that? Yeah. The Wuhan Bats hat. I love it. I love it. That is that's beautiful. Thank you, texter. That's beautiful. Talk about goofy things before we get to Tim Thompson. They had a hearing up in Ohio, right, about vaccines and whether you should take them or not take them. And there was a lady that got up at the hearing, and she said, well, there's evidence why you shouldn't take it, yada, yada. And one of the pieces of evidence was they said there was some lead, I believe it was lead, in the vaccine. It's starting to come out on people who take it or people who are around people who take it. And one of the side effects is they can take a spoon or a fork and put it on their forehead and it'll stick. Now look at Crean. I'm like you, Crean. I'm going like, I can't believe
it. But you know, Mike, there are people who believe that the vaccine hasn't been through the testing process, that there might be side effects. I don't think that one of the side effects is that a fork will stick to your forehead. But there are people who are afraid this hasn't been fully tested, that there might be side effects. Now, I think people of our generation, we're going to take a chance because the COVID will kill us. And even if a fork does stick to our forehead, it won't change our looks that much. But like my son, Scott, and his wife, of course, they've already both had COVID. They're not getting the vaccine because they feel there may be some side effects that
neither one went to the hospital, did they?
No, but they were both in bed for a few days. They're not getting the vaccine, and so I guess there is some legitimate concerns. But I mean, you have to take the consequences with the benefits. And for us, I mean, I didn't hesitate the first day.
Absolutely.
I was eligible
Absolutely.
To get it. I was in line.
Well, my brother, who lives in California, moved out there in 75, and he has a hard time coming back here because it's too cold for him. And he grew up in Dayton, Ohio, with snow and everything else, I mean, come on, brother. So he won't take it, and his wife won't take it.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't get a flu shot. Why do I need to take that? And I said, brother, I guess I can't come out and visit you.
I don't take flu shots either.
Oh, you don't?
No,
I take
the one year I took a flu shot, I was sicker from the shot.
Really?
Yeah, than I would ever have been from the flu. So I don't take flu shots either. With this, I mean, the flu, in most instances, the flu won't kill you. This stuff can.
Now, did you have a little soreness? The only thing I had from my vaccination was a little soreness around the point of entry of the needle.
Right.
And that was it. It didn't hurt bad. Just a little tenderness,
I didn't even have that. Of course, my biceps are much larger than yours. So I guess I could take the stick. But I didn't even
but
have
you at your size, they have to give you two vaccines to get through your body, don't they?
But I didn't even have that. I had no. Now, Sherry. She was a little under the weather for 24 hours after she took hers, but I didn't even get a sore arm out of it. They were probably giving me salt water.
Yeah, they tricked you, didn't they? They tricked you. Yeah. I know as soon as we get Tim Thompson on board, we'll talk a little Vandy basketball, SEC basketball, but the playoffs have become very interesting, have they not?
Yeah, you're talking about the NBA playoffs.
Yes.
They have. Philly jumped back in, and I thought that was a must-win for Philly last night, and they certainly played like it, and a very benign performance from Trae Young. And then you go over to the other game, and Utah and the Clippers. Donovan Mitchell was just unbelievable. I mean, they were down. I think they were down 13 at the half, the Jazz were. And in the third quarter, man, he just put that team on his back and carried them. And it's really fun to watch all of these young guns, Trae Young, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell. It's really fun to watch these guys perform in the playoffs because they are moving to a whole nother level.
45 points for Donovan Mitchell, 32 in the second. But I touted this guy yesterday to you, Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
And he made the shot that really counted. So, you know, Donovan Mitchell's terrific. He's special. Make no mistake. But, boy, Gobert, he erases a lot of mistakes defensively. Yeah. And that shot he blocked at the end of the ball game was, without fouling, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, it's just like when we played with Artis.
Yeah.
You know, that neither one of us could guard our shadow. But you knew.
Whoa, wait a minute now. Wait a minute now.
One of us at least tried to guard their shadow, but it's always fun to have that big guy behind you, that rim protector, to erase those defensive inequities on the perimeter.
Well, let's welcome in Tim Thompson, the analyst, former player at Vanderbilt, and he does the radio, much like you and I have done. And Tim, welcome in.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it. How are you guys doing today?
Well, it's ugly here. I don't know how it is in Nashville, but it is ugly here.
Yeah, we got a little bit of overcast, and I think there's some rain coming in, so the next couple of days aren't going to be real pretty here either.
Well, if you could share with us a little bit about where Vandy basketball is going, and the reason I wanted to have you on, among other things, that you've become a friend, but Vandy finds himself, unlike when you played or others played there, or Dan and I played against Vandy with Tommy Hagan and Bo Wynett and all those guys. I mean, Vandy found themselves in the cellar. And how did they get out? What are they doing in the portal? What are they doing in recruiting? Because I think that when the bottom comes up, you know you have a tough league.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I think the entire league has changed a little bit, you know, dramatically over the years, especially with this whole transfer portal coming in. And if you look at Vanderbilt's roster, and, you know, Mike, you know, you saw him last year. The one thing I will say is I've thought for the last couple of years that Stackhouse has done a really good job from an X and O standpoint, you know, coaching that team. And, you know, he's in a situation now where he's kind of turning over his roster a little bit because, you know, anytime you're in a new job like he's been in, you know, I think you evaluate what's happening. And I think what he's doing now is he's starting to look at the talent pool and he's going to say, okay, we're going to make some changes. But if you look at the roster now, you know, nine of the players from last year are gone, whether it's either graduation, it's transfer portal, that kind of thing. So it's a big upheaval now, and I think you're going to see a completely new roster because Dylan Dessou, who is one of their better players, has transferred to Texas. he was a really nice player, long, athletic, could score, rebound, did a really good job, and then got hurt late in the season and was out for the season. So he's gone. And then Scottie Pippen is, you know, looking at the draft, and it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I don't know where he's projected. I don't think he's projected in the top two rounds. So, you know, there's a chance he might come back, but at the same time, he may go to the G League and that kind of thing. So they have added Liam Roberts, a big kid, led the Big Ten in block shots last year from Minnesota. And Minnesota's another team that has just changed their roster dramatically. But what Jerry did is he hired Ed Conroy, who was an assistant at Minnesota, and Liam Roberts, a 7-foot kid, is his nephew. And so he brought him to Vanderbilt. And I think he's going to be a guy, and Mike, as you well know, you watch Vanderbilt, they did not have an inside presence at all for the last couple years. And I think this kid is going to give them more of an inside presence down low at the block. And then they added a Dayton transfer, a 6'1 guard, Rodney Chapman, who he was a solid player. He averages about 7 a game, 3 assists. He was previously at Chattanooga. And then they have 2 incoming freshmen, Peyton Daniels, 4-star kids. He's a 6'2 guard, and a guy named Gabe Dorsey, who's a 6'6 wing player, who's also a 4-star player. You know, they're coming in for next year. But, again, they're freshmen, and you know how this league is. on freshmen unless you're an ultra, ultra elite freshman in the top, you know, 10 in the country. This league can be tough on freshmen. So, you know, it's just one of those things where I think that there's a large turnover now and it's just not Vanderbilt. I mean, I think that, you know, Kentucky, if you look at what you guys have done, you know, in the transfer portal and the kid from Davidson coming in and some of those things, I think the whole transfer portal is changing the outlook of college basketball in general. And, you know, I've talked to a bunch of people and I've said, you know, between COVID, the transfer portal, and again, I'm not sure if you guys have discussed the NIL, the name, image, and likeness stuff, between those three things that are happening right now in college basketball, I think there's going to be a big turnover. There's already started to be a big turnover in coaches. You know, Coach K's leaving. You know, Roy's leaving. I think it's going to affect some other coaches, and it's also affected athletic directors. That this whole thing is a major turnover, and the transfer portal to me is just, I mean, you almost have to have a full time coach, and that's what he does is stays on the computer and look at the transfer portal just to make sure that, you know, you're aware of kids that are leaving now. So, you know, again, I think that Stack has done a really nice job at keeping this team competitive. But again, he's, you know, he understands, and I think everyone understands that, you know, the talent level's got to improve.
Tim, I wouldn't get too excited about that kid from Dayton. It's been my experience most of the basketball players from Dayton are overhyped anyway. So, so I wanted to ask you. You mentioned that Stack has turned over the roster. He's always also made some changes to his coaching staff, hasn't he?
Yes. Michael Curry, who I think played with Stack with the Pistons, and he was the head coach of the Pistons for a year, and then I think he was at Florida Atlantic for a few years down there. And then again, Ed Conroy, who was the assistant from Minnesota, who actually brought the big kid from Minnesota. So he's added those two guys as his assistants. And, you know, I just think it's one of those things where, you know, I think Stack now, after year two, going into year three, he understands that, you know, it's one of those deals that, you know, I think, you know, he's getting acclimated and starting to know and understand, you know, it's just, you know, college SEC basketball is just a, you know, it's kind of a different animal, and you got to adjust. And I think he's, you know, that's what he's trying to do right now.
We're talking to Tim Thompson, the Vandy radio analyst and former player. Dessue, Tim, he lit us up every game we played Vanderbilt over his, 2-year career? Man, that's a big loss to me. Probably, I don't know, in my mind, a bigger loss for Vandy than the Pippen kid.
Yeah, you know, it was really disappointing. I know at the end of the year he had that injury, but, you know, you look at what he did to you guys up in Lexington. I think he had a double-double, and I think he had 21 points and maybe 10 rebounds. You know, he's just one of those kids that, you know, has just improved, and to me, you're right. I think that's a big loss, because now he is from Pflugerville, Texas, which is, that's where his home is, and I think all of a sudden when this thing started happening, I think everyone started thinking, okay, it's, you know, it's got to be Texas or Texas Tech or someone down there that's where he's going back to, and that's what happened. But you're right, Mike. That's a huge loss. And then, you know, say what you want to about Pippen, he came in as probably a 3-star recruit, but he really improved over the 2 years that he was here. And, you know, you look at what he did throughout the year last year. I mean, he averaged 20 points a game, and, you know, he's a kid that, you know, they really emphasized putting, you know, defensive pressure on him and all that kind of stuff, and he performed at a really, really high level last year.
Tim, talking about Scottie Pippen Jr., he used to be, you know, if you weren't a lottery pick, it was in your best interest to come back to school. But now, with all these other alternatives, the G League, I mean, you can make an NBA salary and be playing in the G League. What kind of advice do you think Pippen Jr. is getting right now about going, turning pro, or coming back to Vandy?
Well, you know, I think it's one of those things, and across the board, you know, you start talking about the G League, and, you know, I'll digress a little bit. You know, this past year, you know, you had Jalen Green that is now going to be the projected number three pick, and Jonathan Kuminga, who's the projected number five pick. And those were players that were in the top 10 in recruiting last year. Kentucky was after both kids, and they elected to go to the G League, Ignite League. And so, to your point, Dan, yeah, there's kids that now are going to say, I'm going to take that $100,000, $150,000. I'm not going to go to college. I'm going to go to the G League, and I'm going to make my money, and I'm going to take my chances on getting drafted, you know, in the top five, because even both those kids are projected in the top five in the NBA draft right now. Pippen, on the other hand, you know, he's in a situation where, you know, he probably is not going to be in the top two, but I think he probably the one thing I will say, and Mike, you remember Saban Lee, who played at Vanderbilt the year before.
Yep.
You know, this kid gets drafted in the second round, and, you know, he's getting playing time, you know, with the Pistons. And I think some of that mentality maybe has come over to, you know, a kid like Pippen, who said, well, you know, Saban gets drafted in the second round, maybe I can go to the G League, or if I do get drafted in the second round, I can still make the roster. And, you know, everyone looks at Vanderbilt, and, you know, you guys played in late 60s, I played in the 70s, and everything was about Vanderbilt was like, okay, get the great education. That's not the mentality of these young kids nowadays anymore. I mean, they come to Vanderbilt, or they come to Duke, or they come to Stanford. These kids, if they're highly rated, they're not worried about the education anymore. That is not something that some of these kids even think about. And I think that's the mentality of today's younger players is, I just got to get to the league. And it doesn't make any difference what school I go to. And it didn't make any difference what the education part of it is. I'm going to play 1 year, I'm going to play 2 years, and then I'm going to go make my money. And that's kind of the mentality that all these young kids are having right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. Unfortunately, not everybody gets to go and make their money, and then without that educational part of it, they're on the street. But Tim, Vandy, back when we played, Vandy was always a very difficult place to play. I mean, the crowd's right on top of you and loud, and especially when you have good teams. How much did, you know, COVID and not having that advantage hurt the team this past season?
Well, you know, Mike, you did games. You know, I did games. You know, we didn't travel on the road. You know, without having a crowd in Memorial Gym or in Rupp Arena or in any arena, I think it's difficult for the home team. And a team like Vanderbilt, that almost is a necessity to have that home court advantage because of the way the benches are and all the other things that go along with a Memorial Gym. To me, that's essential for being successful at home. Now, again, I thought Vanderbilt did a great job of being competitive on the road. Now, you know, I think that was part of the way Stack coached, but I also think it was, you know, you go to Gator Alley or Florida, and you're only playing in front of, you know, just minimal people, or Rupp Arena the same way. That's a different environment when you're playing on the road as well. COVID did affect Vanderbilt. It affected every, in my opinion, every university. Not only with, you know, losing games, but players, and, you know, you look at Vanderbilt's starting lineups over the year last year with COVID, I think it was in the neighborhood of 18 to 19 different starting lineups that they had during a 26 game season. So,
wow.
You know, it was just all kinds of crazy when it comes to that. And like I said earlier, you know, you take the combination of COVID and then the transfer portal. And then I don't know, again, if you guys have talked about the NIL thing, but to me, that thing will drive administrators and coaches out of what they're doing right now. I just think that, you know, these, you know, paying players for their likeness, I understand certain people agree with it, but, you know, there's a bunch of schools that are, you know, that are going to have to hire specific people just to do the NIL process at these schools, especially at the big schools like Kentucky basketball, Duke basketball, Alabama football, you know, Florida football. You know, to me, I think it's going to be a fiasco, and I think it's really going to change the complexion of college athletics here, you know, going forward.
Tim, one last question for you. You work with Nike or for Nike, and you come across a lot of coaches. What feedback are you getting from them as far as the portal situation?
Well, it's more frustration than it is anything else, because I think, you know, probably the three of us, as we look back on what we did over our careers, we're probably more old school, you know, where, you know, Adolph Rupp probably treated you guys a little differently than Calipari probably treats the guys now. And Coach Skinner, you know, treated me different than, you know, Wade Stack would probably, coach now. But it's almost to the point where these coaches feel like they're having to, once they recruit a player, they have to re-recruit them every year. It's like, oh, we got to keep them happy. We got to do this. We got to do that. And, you know, that not only does that affect the Calipari's of the world, the, you know, Coach K's, Izzo's, all that kind of stuff, but think about them, all the mid-major schools that are getting players poached from them. You know, the tampering process, in my opinion, over the next 3 to 5 years is going to be something on the NCAA infraction committees that are going to be beyond the pale to start thinking that. And I'll just use a Belmont University here in Nashville. They had a kid, Adam Kunkel, who's a really good player, probably their best player. Well, next thing you know, he's, you know, I guarantee you people were tampering with him, and he ends up at Xavier. Not to say that they tampered, but at the same time, these mid-major coaches that have really good players, they're going to be in a situation where they're going to struggle to keep some of these players, because if a kid can play, like the kid that's coming to Kentucky from Davidson, that kid can play and he can shoot and he can help Kentucky win. Those kids are going to leave a mid-major program, and now all of a sudden that mid-major program that potentially could win the OVC loses their best one or two players, and next thing you know, it's a whole different ballgame. So it's just not Power Five schools that are involved in this, you know.
Tim, we've made this point before, but when Mike and I were freshmen at UK, we had 12, if you can believe this, we had 12 players on scholarship. And if there had been a transfer portal, all 12 of us would have been gone after the first semester. So, hey, Tim, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with us. And hopefully this year we'll get to see you in Rupp Arena.
That'd be great. Well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and you guys have a great day.
You too. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
All right, see ya.
Tim Thompson, the Vanderbilt analyst, former Vanderbilt player. And you and I go back, and even in the 70s, when they had Fear and Fosness, Fosness, I think his name was. And then they had the other guy that coached there, Van Bretnikoff. They had some really good teams there in the middle 70s.
Well, if you remember our senior year, we were ranked number one in the nation. And until Jacksonville beat us in the NCAA tournament, the only game we lost that year was at Vanderbilt.
And Perry Wallace, if Perry Wallace came along at this point in time in life, he would be playing in the NBA. There just weren't enough jobs.
Right.
Tommy Hagen, we had Tommy as a teammate for probably half of a year.
With the Colonels.
And Bobby Warren played in the ABA from Vanderbilt. So, I mean, this team was, they were really, really good.
Thorpe Weber,
yeah. Boy, he was your guy.
No, that was your guy. You're the one. Joe Hall was so mad at us that we'll have to tell that story when we come back.
We will. That's a good story to tell on us. And we had lunch with Thad Jarrett about a week ago, and Thad was involved too.
Exactly.
So, all right, Crean, we'll take a break, and we'll come back and tell some more stories and talk NBA basketball.
You're locked on Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
I need a good time.
Little Alan Jackson.
You can't go wrong with Alan Jackson.
And I called him to Crean Luke Jackson, who was a basketball player at one time. I got him a little confused. I don't know if Luke Jackson could sing or not, but Alan Jackson.
And I don't know if Alan Jackson could play basketball. It'd be tough to be a rim runner with those cowboy boots on.
Hey, Crean, I'm watching a game last night, and I'm watching in Capella, who we had talked about
yesterday. He's a rim runner.
Yeah. Issel was making fun of me about my definition.
Embiid's a rim runner also.
Oh, yeah, he sure is. But Capella makes one. He pulls a rim runner off. And I sent Dan a text. I never heard back, but I said, Capella, rim running. You know? No, big guys can run,
yeah, I mean,
man.
It makes sense. They run to the rim.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, Dan, we've got a new partner with our show, and it's Stockton Mortgage. And the truth is, there's no magic behind a low rate. Low rates can be found anywhere, but it's not just about the rate. It's about finding the complete financing option that works for you. Stockton Mortgage will help you find exactly the right fit with a low rate included. Visit Stockton.com. Get started today at Stockton.com. NMLS number 8259, equal housing lender.
And we were going to talk about the story about the one and only time that Joe Hall asked us to help recruit a prospect. I think we were sophomores at UK, and there was some All-Star game, maybe the East-West All-Star game. I think it was the East-West All-Star game, and it must have been our freshman year because I think Louie and Pat were playing in that game.
I think you're right.
And it was in Memorial Coliseum. And so we were, after the game, we were in charge of Thorpe Weber, who was a really hot shot prospect from St. Louis. He had come in for the game, was visiting the campus, and my brother Greg, who would have been 17, maybe 18 at the time, was also at the game. And so we were going to go out to dinner with Thorpe later on, but we had some time to kill, and so Greg and Thorpe were supposed to go back to the hotel. And you and I and Case and I think Thad Jerris was with us too. We went down to a little honky tonk in Chevy Chase and might have had an adult beverage or two. And instead of going back to the hotel, Greg and Thorpe follow us to the bar. And so they're in there, and we finally leave. And
they're having adult beverages too, but they're not adults.
Well, Greg did. I'm not so sure Thorpe did or not.
I think he did.
Did he?
Yeah, I think he did.
But so anyway, later on we go out to dinner and Thorpe goes home to St. Louis. And so a little after that, Joe Hall calls Thorpe's mother and says, well, is Thorpe still considering Kentucky? Did he have a good time on his trip? And his mother said, I don't think Thorpe will come to Kentucky. The players drink too much.
And it's postseason, right?
Yeah.
It's postseason, and I believe Thorpe did go to Vanderbilt when we played against him.
And had a good college career.
Oh, he was really a good college player. Big, strong guy at 6'8", left-hander. I remember him. I should have asked Tim Thompson earlier what happened. We should have told Tim the story. He would have laughed. But I think during the course of our career that overlapped with Thorpe Weber, that we talked a little junk to him about being a milk drinker. His mama's boy, a milk drinker. Joe was livid with us,
wasn't he? And like I said, he never asked us to help recruit another player.
Oh, what fun times. Yeah. What fun. Let's talk a little horse racing. There's been some controversy here recently about Bob Baffert and what's going on with that whole situation. And to your credit, I think that what I have read trying to follow this story is that many people now who are supposed to be in the I know what's good for horse racing world are now saying what you said a month or so ago, that, look, you know, we need some type of overall umbrella
yep.
over all these states to coordinate everything because it's so splintered.
Right. And the first salvo, in case you missed it, of lawsuits, of which I'm sure there will be many, was filed yesterday in Frankfurt. And Mike, in my estimation, this has now become way more than just Medina Spirit and this year's Kentucky Derby. The suit alleged, and I'm not a lawyer and don't play one on the radio, but the suit alleges that the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission is not allowing some additional testing that would prove that the betamethasone was topically applied instead of being injected into the joints. Now, you know, it's kind of hard to follow this story because it's kind of like a second marriage where you have her children, his children, and their children. In this story, you have Baffert's attorneys, you have Zidane, the owner of the horse, his attorneys, and then you have their attorneys. One of them last week or so went on CNN and absolutely got roasted. And his argument was, and this is a quote, that may be the regulation, but the regulation is wrong. Now, what a dumb statement. I mean, I don't know how many hundreds of dollars an hour they're paying this guy. That'd be like me driving down 75 this morning on the way to the studio and getting a ticket for going 65 miles an hour around Zorn Avenue and going to the traffic court and telling the judge, you know, I don't think I should have to pay this ticket. I know the speed limit's 55, but it should be 65.
And I want you to make it 65, right?
Exactly. So I think now, and again, I wish we could get somebody from the Kentucky Racing Commission to come on and solve all of this, explain all of this. But in talking to some people who wouldn't come on the radio with us, it's my understanding that it doesn't matter. Betamethasone is a prohibited substance on race day, and it doesn't matter if it's injected, applied topically, given through the orally. If it's in the system, then it's a positive test. And so the next time, I'm convinced that the next time the Kentucky Racing Commission has a hearing, that Medina Spirit, because the Baffert's people have acknowledged that the second the split test came back with positive for the medication, and I am positive that that horse will be disqualified, Mandaloon will be declared the winner, and then you'll have even more lawsuits. But what this lawsuit that they filed yesterday, in my estimation, has nothing to do with this year's Kentucky Derby. This is a lawsuit. They're trying to prove that Baffert didn't inject the horse, that it was applied topically. And this lawsuit is all about a career-saving suit so that Baffert can continue to train racehorses.
Well, and I think you don't want to mention names, but you have a friend that had talked to Baffert recently and called him up and didn't expect to hear from him, but Baffert called him back and talked forever. And his thoughts were...
Yeah, he's really concerned about this. Now, I know that some of his owners have come out and said, we're sticking with Bob. But when you start looking at the economics of this, Mike, and remember, Churchill and its tracks, which include Turfway, the fairgrounds, and Arlington Park, and maybe one other, they have banned extend him for 2 years. So now, if you're going to pay $500,000, $1 million for a yearling, are you really going to send it to a trainer who can't run in the Kentucky Derby for the next 2 years? And so I think what they're trying to do is to prove that it wasn't an injection. The horse wasn't doped, as many people who don't have knowledge of horse racing think it was, and that maybe Churchill will rethink that band, and maybe some other racetracks who you haven't heard from yet. We don't know what Keeneland's going to do. We don't know what Ellis Park's going to do. New York has temporarily suspended him. But if he can't run a horse in the Derby or the Belmont for the next 2 years, I mean, people are going to be flocking out of there.
And my question to you, and maybe it should be to a veterinarian, is they want more testing. Okay, are they going to test off that split? Or, I mean, it's almost a month since the Derby. How can you do more testing in this situation beyond what you've already done using that?
Yeah, well, again, I'm just, I don't have all of the details, all of the facts. But yesterday they mentioned doing additional testing with a urine sample. And the blood sample's been tested twice. And it came, but this is all about proving. This isn't proving. This isn't trying to prove that the horse ought to win the Kentucky Derby, that he didn't have betamethasone in his system. This is all about proving that Bob Baffert didn't inject the horse.
Which isn't it pointless, though, because it's in his system, and the rule says it can't be in your system.
Yeah.
So I don't see why.
And it's pointless. Yeah. Jack, you're absolutely right. It's pointless. It's just like all of the money that Gary and Mary West spent on lawyers going through the courts trying to get maximum security reinstated as the Kentucky Derby winner. It's pointless. The regulation doesn't say you can have betamethasone in your system if it was applied topically and not injected. The rule says that it doesn't matter how it got in the system, that if it's in the system, he's going to be disqualified. So they can file all the lawsuits they want. Also, a friend of mine told me that there is no right to race a horse at a Kentucky track. You race at the pleasure of the Kentucky Horse Racing Association and the racetracks. So if Churchill Downs, in my estimation, if Churchill Downs doesn't want Baffert in their stable, they can sue all they want. They can spend all the money on lawyers they want. I think you're right, Crean. I think it's pointless.
What do you think about that?
I like that I was right.
Yeah,
I like that. But
hey, Jack, as I told you yesterday, if you have something to add to the show, we love for you to chime in. And we just don't care if you disagree with what we say.
Oh,
in your nice collared shirt.
Yes. Well, did you watch the playoffs? A little bit last night.
Yeah,
the last game's hard to.
No, I didn't. I didn't make it to any of the last game. I was so exhausted from my beautiful trip to Albuquerque. I think I was asleep. I laid down. I made the mistake, instead of sitting up and watching it, I made the mistake of laying down on the bed to watch the first game, and I didn't even make it to the end of the first game.
Well, you've got to tell the story about the mask that you told me before we went on air, about the mask situation in the Dallas airport.
Yeah. Well, I had the mask, the Albuquerque, New Mexico mask on for about 15 hours, and you had to have it on. I mean, they had people walking around the airport.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Monitors?
Hall monitors. And, a couple of them I wasn't scared of, but when the guys with the guns started walking around
looking for masks, I decided I better keep mine on. But I had that mask on for 15 hours through the airports and the flights. And then I had time before I got on my last flight to Louisville. I had time to stop in and grab a beer. And so I went in there, and they're standing room only. They're elbow to elbow at the bar, and not one person has a mask on. And there's a kid sitting next to me, a nice kid, and so I bought him a beer, and he said, I've got to go to the restroom. He said, will you watch my stuff? And he got up and started walking out and came back and had to put his mask on to walk across the hallway 20 feet to go to the restroom. Oh. Came back in, took the mask off, and
sat down, finished his beer.
Happy days are here again.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
That's amazing.
Are you familiar with Luke Kennard, who plays now with the Clippers, originally played with Detroit?
Right.
Okay, he's from Franklin, Ohio, and this is a story I'm going to tell. Dave Baker, we all know Dave. He's been a friend of ours for a long time.
Yep.
And you've got a grin on your face, so you probably have a Baker story or two.
I love Baker.
He grew up in Franklin and grew up on the same street. He was neighbors with Luke's dad, who went to Georgetown, played ball at Georgetown, and Baker didn't play ball, but he was there at the same time. Okay, there's the connection.
Okay. All right.
Now, Luke Kennard's parents are from up in the mountains of Kentucky, eastern Kentucky, okay? And they have tickets, and they've come down religiously. I mean, big UK fans, okay? And his dad would meet him and come to the game. And so I'm speaking to a group up in Dayton. It was the spring of Luke Kennard's junior year. And a guy comes up to me and he introduces himself. He said, I'm the assistant coach at Franklin, whatever the name of the school is, where Luke Kennard plays. I go, who the hell's Luke Kennard, right? I don't know. I mean, I live in Louisville. And he says, he's really a good prospect. Can you pass his name along to the people of Kentucky? Then he gave me this background story. So, long story real short, I inquired
too
about
too late.
Him. No, well, no. They went down to the nitty gritty with Duke, but it is an interesting story in that I called Kenny Payne and I called Baker, and Baker called Kenny Payne. We said, look, here's the connections, okay?
Right.
You got to get this kid. Now, he's a football player, baseball player, very, very good athlete. So they got after him, and, you know, with Kentucky style, they don't like to rush right out at the start. They like to come in and make it a very select group that they offer to. But they got after this kid, okay? They understood.
Not to interrupt, but do you think they're waiting to see what other schools might be interested in the kid before they jump in?
No, I don't. I think that what they don't want to be associated with every player out there. They know who they have a chance to get and who's really interested, and I think they want to make this a special deal. That's what I gather just listening.
That makes sense.
And that, you know, it's that they're just not flying around giving out scholarships. So, Calipari goes up to see him play football, and Kentucky's in the deal. I mean, they're right there at the end. And it's a funny story Baker told me about, and Luke's dad told him. And why I'm telling this story, I'll get to that in the bottom, since you don't know Luke Kennard. But I guess that he told his parents the day before he was going to announce that he was going to Duke. Everybody in the family cried because they were all Kentucky fans. Baker said they all were crying. The grandparents were crying. The kid's going to Duke. I can't believe he's going to Duke. Wow. You know, just crying. So last night he has a big game.
Exactly. Yeah. I saw that. He came off the bench for the Clippers and had a really nice game.
Yeah, he did. And here's the quote from the Los Angeles Times. One of the L.A. papers, is that Luke Kennard scored 11 points in the Clippers playoff win. This was before last night. Showing the southpaw touch that used to bring fans off their tractors to watch him play in Franklin, Ohio. So I'm reading a quote from Baker. He's going, you know, there were no tractors. I mean, this is a suburb. You know.
What a Los Angeles view on the world.
Yeah, there you go, Green. That's where I'm going, yeah.
It's from the Hudson River to the California state line. They all think –
that everybody in between is some
nothing.
Country bumpkin that drives a tractor.
Yeah. And Baker had tweeted out that he remembers very well that Luke's dad used to mow the lawn with a push lawnmower, you know. But I think that you would appreciate that, having lived in L.A. for a while.
So that was the last game against Dallas.
Correct.
And then last night he had even a bigger game in Utah, right?
Yep. Yeah. He can shoot it now. Left-hander, he can shoot it. He struggled at times to make the play off the bounce, but that's okay. He can spot up and shoot it,
right?
And that's his game. I mean, you know, he's like the Harris guy that plays for the Brooklyn team.
Exactly. You know? When you're playing with people like George and like Kawhi, that's exactly what you want to be, as a spot up shooter. Get to an open spot and let them get you the basketball.
I always thought that playing with you, but I never could get you to throw it back.
What did you guys think of the last possession of that Clippers Jazz game last night? The Clippers not calling timeout down three and just not getting a clean look.
Every coach has a different philosophy, and I'll ask Dan his philosophy on this, because I've been asked that, to include when I'm watching a game with my wife. She asks, well, why didn't he call timeout? Your thoughts on calling timeout in the last seconds of a game?
Yeah, there's you know, obviously two different theories. Number one is you don't want to call a timeout. You don't want the defense to be able to have time to discuss the situation, to get the defense set. You want to attack off the dribble. And I think if you've got veteran people, like I would have no trouble whatsoever letting Chris Paul take the ball down the court and not calling timeout and letting him get into the offense. Now, the other situation is, you know, maybe you don't have a Chris Paul on your team, and you want to make darn sure that everybody's on the same page and running. It used to be a little different. If you remember, Mike, if you called a timeout, you had the choice of and the reason a lot of coaches call timeout is to save the time, because you can move the ball up to half court.
Good point.
And have more time in your offense. And it used to be that if you move the ball up to half court, you had to throw the ball in the forecourt. And a lot of coaches thought, well, that gives the defense an advantage, because, you know, you have to throw the ball in front of the 10-second line, and you can use the half court and the out of bounds, the side out of bounds, as kind of additional defenders. But now you can take the ball out of half court and you can throw it back behind the 10-second line. So I would say the way I would look at it is, it all depends on your personnel. If you're comfortable that your personnel are smart enough to run the right play, then go ahead and do it. If you've got a young team or maybe a point guard you don't have a lot of confidence in, then you call the timeout and make sure everybody knows exactly what's going on.
And to your point, I always thought that two most important pieces of it was the man who you were inbounding the ball to, like Chris Paul. But in college, you have to make sure, and you work on this play all the, at least we did. We worked on it probably every other day, going the length of the floor. We did a lot of those drills. But I always was concerned and wanted to have the right guy inbounding the ball.
Yeah.
Okay, because you know the other team is going to put a big man of some form or fashion with long arms trying to deflect the pass. So I thought the two most important pieces were the man you were inbounding the ball to, what can he do with it, and the guy that's making the pass. And I also subscribe to the theory that if it's 20 to 10 seconds left, I'm probably calling timeout. Okay?
Yeah.
Because I can set one play to score. I can set two more plays, one on a miss and one on a make. Okay, when to foul and who to foul. You can set anywhere from two to four plays, depending on how smart your team is, okay? And when it gets to 10 seconds, I never saw any real reason to call a timeout at that point, 10 and under, unless that you –
had one to use with 1 or 2 seconds, but typically you don't.
Right. And to answer Jack's question, you've got a veteran team on the floor. You got Kawhi, you got Paul George. So there was probably nothing that Tyronn Lue could come up with that those two fellas already didn't know what was happening. So to not call a timeout, I'm fine with that.
And to credit to Utah, they did a great job of rotating and not giving up an open look, and Gobert making the block at the end to seal the game.
And we'll wrap it up with this, because we've got somebody from Kansas City here. Crean's going to make sure that we get the heck off the air at the right time, right? Dave Buzz Baker responded to the LA Times, says, Franklin is a bedroom community in southwest Ohio, where most people like my dad worked in the mills, anywhere from Cincinnati to Dayton. I don't know if you could even buy a tractor there.
Franklin, Ohio.
All right. This is Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, ESPN. Louisville 105.7, 680, and we'll be back for the second hour.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 plus up to $425 in weekly bonuses depending on shift. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
CarMax is hiring experienced auto technicians for many of its 200-plus stores nationwide. If you're looking for a job where you can make a great living while working on the cars that you love, then CarMax is the place for you. Join CarMax to grow your technical expertise and work with state-of-the-art tools and technology. Work with the cars you love. Join CarMax. Apply today at CarMaxAutoTech.com.